morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome to the Amateur Otaku Podcast, where we are talking about the new anime that's about to premiere, Frieren? Beyond Journey's End, produced by Madhouse, the amazing anime studio that's been on forever, and based on the manga written by Kanehito Yamada. It's all about this elf that lives forever and mourns the loss of her fellow, you know, soldiers. And it's about the story that she lives after the big journey that everybody has in defeating the Demon King. We're not trying to defeat Demon King. He has been defeated. It's all about the life after. Very interesting take, very interesting anime. And we got the Amateur Otaku crew here to talk about it. We got Isaac, Jamie, Mike, and our good buddy Didge. What's up, guys? How's everybody doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, doing well. Happy to be here.
Excited to talk about our first fall anime review. You know, new season. A lot of stuff happening.
That's true. It is ESL season, everybody.
Good time of
year. There's in an anime verse, there are pumpkins shitting pumpkin seeds into coffee. It's happening.
You can say that our season of coverage is falling into place.
Welcome to the pod, Isaac.
Oh, please.
I like the
pod. So we had the great privilege, thank you, Crunchyroll, of watching this show before it airs. So this review will be a spoiler-free review, but don't worry. A spoiler-filled review of the first two episodes, which encompass the premiere of Frieren Beyond Journey's End. We have a spoiler-full video that will come out 30 minutes after the premiere of the show. So this is the type of episode that you could watch to see if it's right, if this show is for you. And if you want to talk in depth about the episode, we'll have an episode after. So guys, we've seen the show. We had an opportunity to watch, I think, the first 2 to 3 episodes of it. And we all had similar takes on it, but I do want to go around the table to see what your general thoughts on Frieren Beyond Journey's End is, because I think it's a very, very good show and it has a lot going for it, especially because of how unique and different it is in the take of story. Didge, you joined us when we watched it. What is your general thought on this show?
I thought it was pretty good. It's one of those ones where, like we were saying, it tells the story after the fact. And I'm personally interested in that always. Like, I like hearing the epilogue of stories and sort of seeing what goes on with life after the big battle. So I'm interested in that aspect. It was pretty good. It was one of those ones. It's not world beating, but I do think that people should watch it.
Isaac Wolf, Mr. Anime Travaganza, the Mad Dog, you've seen a lot of anime. Why should people watch this one?
I mean, it's sort of, did you just kind of sort of mention that to you just right now? It's a story that after the story, it's something that is, how should I put it? There's not much that is similar to it. The reason why I would say that you should watch this show is because it's sort of like a breath of fresh air in that you see, in the case that Did said, you can see the epilogue, you see how a society is continuing after the big battle and kind of ready. Is this sort of like a masterpiece per se of what I've seen so far? I wouldn't say. But it piqued my interest well enough that I want to continue watching it after these episodes.
Jamie, what are your thoughts on Frieren?
I also enjoyed it. I think something that we haven't touched on yet, but a lot of us talked about while we were watching the episodes, is the fact that this is like a gorgeous looking anime, and it definitely looks a bit more like some of like the 90s or like early 2000s anime. Sometimes more than others, but it's definitely like the overall aesthetic that they're going for, which I really enjoy, and like that they put that like time and detail into like however it is that they've achieved the look that they have. I'm a huge fan of like slice of life anime. So I've really been digging this, and I like some of the themes that, is being discussed around like, Frieren and, like reflecting on her life and like her connections with people. And I guess how to become, even though she's an elf, it seems almost like she wants to become a little bit more human in a way. So I've really been enjoying like her journey and trying to discover like how she can achieve that. And yeah, it's been a gorgeous anime to look at, if nothing else.
Mr. Thomas.
Oh, my turn.
I mean, everybody else went.
Yeah, you know, math's not my strong suit. So I really enjoyed these first few episodes of the show. Like everybody was saying, it's an interesting take that the first episode starts, right? And this isn't a spoiler. Like the first episode starts, it's like, yeah, the show should be over. That should be the ending of any other anime. We defeated the Demon Lord. Michael Jackson has been defeated. Tanjiro can go home. Like that's exactly the feeling we got at the end of these other types of fantasy shows, right? These epics. But this picks up after the fact. We don't even see what the Demon Lord was, what that threat even was, because like Jamie was saying, it's very much a slice of life angle on it, where it's like, what is Frieren's role in this world? What is life like after that? And a question that we have, like, I am a massive Lord of the Rings fan. What happens once they defeat the big bad, right? And like Legolas is going to outlive everyone. It's going to be like in his time frame, that's going to be like a week that he spent with Aragorn and Samwise and Frodo. And so we never really get answers to like, how does that affect these characters that live such long lives, right? And so I think it's interesting how they kind of focus that in on her character and like her trying to understand human emotion and their short lifespan and trying to connect with people. I think that's a really cool angle that they take with it. And so, yeah, great first impression.
It's funny that you mentioned the idea of longevity in elves, because all I can hear is Arwen's father telling her what it would mean to actually follow Aragorn. You know, that whole sequence of just pain, because she will outlive Aragorn. There's no other way that's going to play out, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of immortality and how it's not immortality, but almost near immortality in the life of this elf, right? Because from the get-go, I don't know if you guys were able to see the actual trailer for the show. By the time the journey against, by the time the fight against the Demon Lord occurs and they win and they go back to this city, this kingdom, she's already 1,000 years old. So the idea that that's how long she's lived, it could be that moment where they fight the Demon King, it's the first time that she's done that kind of adventure, done that kind of task, had that kind of victory, faced that kind of enemy, right? Yeah. That I find it brilliant how this show is not about the spectacle, but how no matter how old or how young you are, you're never going to know everything. You're always going to learn something. There's always a new experience. And I like the idea of how those experiences are really linked to people, not to things that she does. They're all linked to people. And the fact that she's able to meet so many people because of how long her life is, she's going to keep gathering experiences for everybody. So it's interesting to think that we were talking about it, which is not a spoiler, but one of the characters, I'm not going to say who, one of the characters, because of this longevity, when one of those characters dies, right, and that impacts her, she is finding a reaction and emotion that she probably didn't quite consider, and that's kind of what drives her to just interact more with people and find answers and understanding. I like that. The only show, especially for the angle that everybody talked about the this show is the greatest epilogue ever written, right? like the only other show or anime in a way that I can think that uses this trope, but it really only uses it for the beginning, is Rurouni Kenshin. Because when you meet Kenshin, he is Hidokiri Batosai because of the war that passed. He is this hero coming through, and you're picking up what he's trying to make his life now. So you can kind of say that Rurouni Kenshin kind of has that same thing, but it's not like an anime trope that's consistently revisited. And I like how this one is doing it, because they're turning a fantasy drama. It's a fantasy drama, but it's not about the fantasy elements as much as it is about, like Jamie said, the slice of life elements. So I think it's something different, but good different. And it has the potential to be great. And in the little episodes that we saw, I think we saw a lot of great stuff. And I think I want to talk, because I don't know what you guys think about it. The animation style that they picked for this show, like we saw a little bit of the opening and the ending. We're not going to talk where we found them, but that was just an inside joke. But we saw, and those anime openings and endings, those feel like what you expect more modern anime to have, right? But when you go to the actual show, I don't want to say dated. That's not the right word, because that's very negative.
Retro or vintage.
Right.
Fashion words.
But I would say it's very it's so apparent how they favor hand-drawn animation for this show. Because it feels rough. It doesn't feel clean or pristine like most digital images that you would have. A lot of times the animation reminds me of the original Full Metal Alchemist anime, which was top tier hand drawn animation, not Brotherhood, which had a lot of more digital cleanliness to it, but like the original FMA of Full Metal Alchemist. It reminds also the animation style reminds me a lot of Eva, especially the faces, the type of eyes. It's like it's like everybody took notes from that old school generation of animators. And I don't want to know if anybody felt this, like I didn't miss that it wasn't modern animation. I enjoyed that they picked that. It was startling at first, because we've been watching so many animes that don't look nothing like that. Like Jujutsu Kaisen looks nothing like this show, but I appreciated that old take. What do you guys think?
It wasn't startling to me. It was a breath of fresh air for me. I love the 90s anime aesthetic, that hand-drawn aspect, the imperfections, the sort of, you can feel like the realism to it, I guess is a good way to put it. Like, obviously it's animated, but you feel, it feels sort of like real, it feels like lifelike. Mm-hmm. And so seeing it here, it was, like I said, it was a breath of fresh air, because I wish more animation would get back to that. Obviously, modern animation, it's very clean. It's very beautiful. But I think when everything is so almost systematic and very industrialized, you lose some of the naturalism of it. And I think this brought us back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think just piggybacking off of that, it also kind of adds to the storytelling, at least for me, just with how like potentially emotional the story can be when dealing with like all these different strong emotions that Frieren has like not really confronted I think the art style definitely kind of like lends itself to this kind of emotional state. Emotional from, admittedly, there's like a bit of nostalgia, like, oh yeah, like I haven't seen anything that looks like this in a while. But also just because of like the way that like colors will like blend together and like the shots that they're choosing to like display and the colors that they use, like a lot of those things, it just feels very sentimental to me. So I really like the choice. I don't think it's fully hand-drawn because there are some things in there. Well, at least I hope it's not fully hand-drawn because some of the things in there, I'm like, that any animator would look at that and be like, no. No, I will not.
Like nowadays, I'll be like, no, bro, I'm good.
Like, I'm good off of that. I think it's definitely a mix of both, but I like the attention to detail as far as calling back to like, okay, if we were to hand draw this, like, how would this look? How would we approach this? Like, can we take some of those same methods and apply it to our show so it can have that same kind of like look and feel? But yeah, I would definitely say this art style combined with like the themes of the show feels very sentimental to me. So it just makes it an even more complete package.
Yeah, it really makes it feel like a comfort show, right? Like you're sitting down, you're watching this classic. It feels like Brandon was saying at the top of this conversation, it reminds us of those older shows, those older anime. And I think that helps. One thing I was talking to our friend Christian from Film Optics about was the Naruto remake, right? Like we saw that clip that they made for the 20th anniversary like a year ago, and they reanimated iconic moments. And as cool as it looked, a lot of people are like, it's missing the soul of what Naruto was. And it's like some of that, the hand-drawn animation from classic Naruto kind of aided in the emotion and the details of those specific moments. And it was very, like Didge said, sterilized, seeing some of those moments recreated in that digital format. So this show kind of has that balance of, it does feel like it was made by a real person. Not to say that these other anime aren't, but they're clearly...
Hashtag Illuminati.
Yikes.
No, but like, it's like comfort food in a way, right? Like you can go to the greatest restaurant in the world and you're going to have a great meal, but it's not the same as when mom makes you a meal, right? And that's the feeling I get from this art style, where it feels homemade. Essentially. And so I think, like Jamie was saying, it aids to the storytelling because the basic animations in the faces, in the backgrounds, get elevated when we do get those moments when it does pop, right? Where we see, because she's still a mage, you still see magic, you still see all that stuff. And so when that happens, it's such a cool contrast where you're like, oh yeah, I forgot how powerful she was. Because that's not the main focus on the story. So I think that marriage between the two styles, that's why the opening and the ending you were talking about, I think that really works because this show is basically a tale of two different worlds in a sense, which I think is really cool.
Yep. It's powerful stuff too, because it makes me think that one of the greatest things that this show offers for viewers in this fall season is that after Bleach Core 2, after Jujutsu Kaisen Season 2, which I think is still going, but like this is the best palate cleanser you can ever watch. Like it allows you to just step into something, feel refreshed, and just it, like if you just want to go for a ride, you go for a nice smooth ride, you find your humanity, you find out that, you know, your hobbies, just looking for spells. Like it's, you know what I mean? It's, there's a simplicity to it. I think how simple this show is, because this show does not try too hard. It doesn't overcomplicate what it wants to be. It's simple and through. She was a mage that helped the hero defeat the Demon King. And that's done. So now she has to figure out what's next. And all she's also just doing is...
Sorry, I just wanted to like even acknowledge her place in that story as a whole, right? She's essentially... This is what Aerith is doing after Cloud defeated whatever. You know, like she's not even the main character of that story.
Right.
Which I just think is a very interesting perspective.
Yes. She, the, yeah, the when the show starts, she's a supporting character.
Right.
It's almost like a spinoff.
Exactly.
Rock Lee, but you don't miss the old story.
Right. You don't miss the main
like, they like, still weave it in.
Yeah, like it's like you don't care, like, okay, bet who the I don't care about Sephiroth. I want to know what Aerith's doing. Actually, I want to know what Tifa's doing. But you know what I mean? Like it's there's a bar. But it's one of those things like
you gotta love those apps.
I love how Isaac's been silent for like 10 minutes. And that's when he comes back.
Hey, when waifu come knocking,
Isaac
Isaac.
I'm from Sweden. Give me a break.
There it is.
But I also think that, like, speaking to your point, Brandon, about this being like a really great palate cleanser, I'm also glad that it's coming out when it's coming out, because, you know, Spy Family, literally like a week, maybe 2 weeks away. 1 week away. Yeah. Which when I was watching it, I was thinking like this is my palate cleanser, you know, with like Attack on Titan going on, and I think Jujutsu Kaisen was, I don't know.
It was Attack on Titan, My Hero Academia, and Chainsaw Man.
And Chainsaw Man, right.
Oh, for last year, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like Bleach. A lot of very intense, very violent kind of stories. And then we had Spy Family, where it's like, we're following Anya to school. She's trying to make friends, you know? So so I think even with this, I'm wondering how it will pair with Spy Family, especially since Spy Family is seeming to be, at least I hope, it will be heating up this season with hopefully some more Yore, hopefully just like the family in general, they're going to start to hone in on their mission. But with this, it's very much like, you know, mission complete. We're doing the side quests now. We're actually exploring the environment, getting to know some different people and communities. So it's a definitely a different feel for sure.
It's like after Ethan Hunt saves the world, it's like instead of following Ethan Hunt, we just go, hey, Luther, where are you going? Let's just follow Luther.
I would love that, actually. Paramount, make that a show. What is Luther and Benji doing when Ethan
is Agreed.
They just hang out by the phone, wait for Ethan to call.
Oh, that's so sad. I hope it's not that. That'd be depressing.
That would be.
He's off with Haley Atwell now. It's fine.
But yeah, it's a great show. I think for those of you out there that are coming out of the Shibuya incident or coming out and need something in between as you prepare for what the rest of the season's, because again, Attack on Titan is finally ending very soon. And you need something.
It doesn't end.
Allegedly.
What are they doing? Like, there's only one chapter left to adapt. What are they doing?
Stop.
They're doing a Boruto.
You see, that used to be an insult, but Boruto's kind of fire right now, so I wouldn't be opposed.
Agreed. So it's one of those things, like, if you need a palate cleanser, if you love slice of life stories, if you like magic, and if you just want to follow Freyring around and see her get eaten by mimics, this is the show for you. Which, by the way, it's hilarious how an amazing mage like herself, so naive and childlike. I also like that her character is a great mixture of wisdom, naivete. It's like she's not a child, but she's not an adult, but you can't really tell because of her age and how she looks. And also, but she's like
aging on a curve a little bit, you know, like kind of like how Thor is 15,000 years old, right? But he acts like he's 30 at best, you know.
Yeah,
they just
age. But it's like the best stories. Yeah, it's the best stories that include godlike figures or eternal figures, like this one. It's all about them finding some type of humanity in themselves as they interact with humans, and that's
anyone the of best you to your eternity.
I have not. It's on my list.
I watched the first season. I was depressed.
Oh no!
I would argue that it's depressing to say the least. But the reason why I put that out, it's based on the two episodes. It kind of has the same type of, or at least similar tempo as To Your Eternity, but although you're not going to be depressed while watching this, at least from what we can gather of these episodes so far.
Yeah, at least so far. It definitely does kind of touch on some, I guess, saddening topics, and it's just like, it's just very real, you know, just very real when it comes to life. Yeah. But To Your Eternity, that's something different. Like, that, yeah.
I'd rather watch Schindler's List and Grave of the Fireflies back to back before watching To Your Eternity again.
I don't know if I agree with
worst
that
examples
one.
Ever.
Yeah, I'm real life.
I'm out.
That's
okay.
Kind of
good job, guys.
So, back to the show.
One of the things that I also. I had the thought right there. It's right there. This is the kind of show that also, because of how simple it is, because of how great the storytelling is, because of how endearing and how, you know, like, transparent and interesting, naive also, Frieren is, it kind of draws out the horrible anime tropes or story tropes that a lot of times we're used to, because how many times were we thinking, oh, is this the villain? This person is a horrible person. Like yeah. We were looking for the darkness and the anime just didn't need it. Apart from those life moments. And I found that hilarious, but also refreshing.
Yeah. There are moments like Didge said a second ago, like there is an undercurrent of drama and sadness, and I think we felt that upon initial viewing, and we were trying to assign, like you said, assign those specific roles and traits to characters, and it's like maybe they weren't as bad as we thought they may have been, but that
priest was definitely generic.
No, but it's like you're watching the show and it's like the tone, it feels like something's up, and I think that's just because Fran as a character is so unique in the fact that, like you said, she is extremely intelligent. She's also extremely naive. She can also come off as extremely cold. And that's kind of the entire point of the story, is it's really her trying to find her humanity, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe the world isn't as bleak as we're trying to make it out to be. And that's just her trying to soften up and warm up to the world around her, which I think is, again, a testament to the subtle storytelling in this series, because like if you just break it down, it is just a bunch of side quests and grabbing mm-hmm. items and helping people plant
flowers.
It's
the ultimate NPC hunt.
We even have a freaking a tail mission in there.
Yes,
everybody's favorite.
We do. We just need the escort mission and you're good.
Yeah, there
it's,
you go.
It's coming.
Don't let us sleep.
I'm sure it's coming, yeah.
But I think the writing in this show is like, it plays off, or it subverts your expectations of like what traditional anime does, or especially like fantasy anime with like these different character tropes. And yeah. I think because of that and the themes of the show, like the people that she interacts with just end up being more like real people. Like real people are not one tone, like, oh, I'm a bad guy, or oh, I'm a good guy, or oh, I like to be like pervy or whatever. Like real people, like they have different like sides to themselves and like different facets and things that you'll see. And they interact differently depending on like who's around them. So that's a big kudos to the writing team for that. It's really impressive.
Yeah. I don't know, guys. I think we've done the thing. No spoilers. We've talked about Frieren beyond Journey's End. I mean, the title says it. It's the journey's over. This is after.
You know what the alt title for this show is? It's crazy. It's Frieren at the Funeral. That's what the
Yo.
Title is.
Dang. I did want to mention one last thing. I don't know if I want to save it for the spoiler review, but one of the things that I like is there's a scene in one of the episodes where someone that we meet in the second episode keeps asking Farron, like, why does she like spells? Why does she like magic? And interestingly enough, it's like her way of understanding the world. That's her way in, you know, like the fact that she's always searching for magic or is a magician is what allows her to be of service to other people and connect. As opposed to it being, I like the idea of magic as opposed to just being a weapon to create awesome explosions, right? It's like as soon as we heard the book, all we thought of was necromancy and zombies. And like, no, it's not about that. Like to Farron is like, that's how she communicates. That is part of her, of how she extends who she is. And I don't think I can say that I've seen magic used in that way that frequently. And because most of the times we see magic is because it's a MacGuffin or it's part of her character and how she expresses herself. And I just found that very interesting. Very particular and interesting use of that element. Has meaning. Do we have anything else, guys? Anybody else want to drop anything else on this spoiler-free review of Farron Beyond Journey's End?
I would like to see more dogs. This show, slice of life, man. Let me tell you, they do great things for this genre. Let's have some dogs in here.
I love Jamie's perspective because I'm looking at our screen and I'm seeing all the Full Metal Alchemist stuff. I want no part of dogs. Keep the dogs out my anime. Except for Bond. He's great.
Yeah, what about the ninja dogs? Especially the one with the metal feet. Paul. I'm that far.
So what you're saying is that you want more cats in anime instead of dogs.
No, okay, we're not having that debate. Also, cat girls are a thing, and I don't need that many of them in my anime either.
Okay, this is getting out of control. Thanks, Isaac, for bringing the chaos. Guys, if you love what we do here at the Amateur Talker Podcast, let us know in the comments below. Make sure you subscribe, click on that like button, and share with your friends. If you love this show or have read the manga, let us know about it in the comments below. And if there's other shows this fall that you would like us to cover, let us know, and we might find time to cover it. Till then, have it awesome, stay awesome, and keep watching anime. Peace, guys. And...